Wow. It's December already. Looks like some white Christmas material coming to the region over the weekend. Welcome, everybody, to Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross, rolling up towards 7 minutes after 5 on the 7th of December. Today on the program, it's singer-storyteller Ken Lonquist bringing his Kenland Players Theater to Amory tomorrow night. We'll talk about Old Befana. You'll learn all about that. That's a seasonal story you may not have heard about. Jim Oliver talks with author Rob Bignell, who has regional ties and has published his first novel. Jim also has all you need to know about what's on stage in West Wisconsin, even the auditions coming up. It's a big singing weekend at UW Stout. We'll talk with Daniel Clark, who's directing these talented young people's voices. The Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra brings us Big and Bold in their version of a holiday concert. Jeff Peterson is here with that scoop. And guess what? Tomorrow evening is the long-anticipated Big River Radio Wave Holiday Show. Last year it was in Chippewa Falls, this year back home in Alma at the Big River Theater. It literally sends a glow up into the night sky at whatever venue it's presented. That's a phenomenon agreed to by Wave host Mac Cherry.
Absolutely. You'll be able to navigate the towboats on the river by it because we've got a brand-new, fresh-faced comedian coming out of the cities, Amber Preston. She's a funny young lady. She's going to bring some holiday frivolity to the show.
Who's this special guy coming from far away?
Well, his name is Hywel Taff Roberts, and he's a native Welshman. He's an adventurer. He's sailed the high seas, and he comes to us by way of Winona. These days is where his residence is. He's going to be doing a reading of Dylan Thomas's A Christmas Child A Christmas Child in Wales. No, A Child's Christmas in Wales. And he's been doing this for, gosh, almost 30 years. And it's very seasonal, very melancholy, and very dramatic. And then our old friend Kenny Solway is going to be there doing A Winter's Tale from his archives of his life on the river. And the house band, the Riverbenders, we have a couple musical surprises in store for you, actually an original Christmas carol, and then a couple that you might be familiar with.
Is that all? I mean, that's quite a stellar lineup.
Well, just between you and I, we have an extra special surprise, and I don't want this to get on the radio unless it has to, but that surprise is that Santa's going to be there.
Get out of here.
No, seriously.
See, I always thought you guys had pull, but I didn't know you had that much.
We've got pull and we've got swing, and we're using it all for this particular show to get him. But, you know, he's kind of a fan of Big River Radio Wave. He's been listening now for 3-4 years, and he showed up last year, kind of unexpected, kind of surprised, you know, and he's actually wearing the whole garb and stuff, and he's just hanging out and shows up and knocks out of the park, as always. And we find out a few things that we maybe didn't know and some of the things that we didn't really want to know. But when you're talking with Santa, you kind of let him run the show, but he will be there on Saturday night as well, and I know that I'm excited, and I'm hoping that he brings me something, because he didn't last year, or the year before that, or several years.
You've heard the story of having to earn something, I hope.
No, I never heard that story.
Yeah.
Oh, you have to earn it.
So it's a Saturday night, which is cool. That's different and welcomed. Really no excuses for not coming to the... In fact, I understand that Santa has almost made it mandatory that people come to the Big River Radio Wave Show, or he might reconsider the list.
Well, you know, and I don't want to put that out there. I don't want people to feel pressured, but he has not just put it out there. He told me that specifically, that it's going to weigh heavily on who gets what and who doesn't. You know, because when he says that, he knows if you've been sleeping, he knows if you're awake, he knows if you've been bad or good, and he knows if you've gone to the Big River Radio Wave show. And that's one of the things they leave out of that little limerick, because it doesn't rhyme.
But it's in there. It's in the original version.
It's in the original version, yeah. You can look it up. Oh, I think it's on the Internet. Look it up on the Internet.
And keep in mind, he's coming to Alma, where there is an abundant supply of coal. The Dairyland Power has got a huge pile.
There is, and I think that's where he actually gets it from originally, but you know, you don't want to give him a reason to use it.
One last question. Will there be mistletoe?
No, we're going to be selling mistletoe at the lobby, and you know, with a wire hanger, like a wire hanger hat.
Mm-hmm.
that you can position that any place that you like.
Mistletoe hanging over a little bottle of sanitizer.
Well, you know, that depends on what kind of problems you have.
A bad idea.
It's not a bad idea. And now that you mention it, I think we could probably add that as part of a package deal. Everything to do with the season is going to be there that night.
And that night, folks, is tomorrow night. Two shows from which to choose: the Big River Radio Wave at 6 p.m. You know, do the wave at 6, then grab a bite to eat, or eat a bit earlier and have the wave for dessert at 8 p.m. Either way, it's becoming as traditional for the holidays as Pfeffernuss, Spike Nog, and shopping online. The Big River Radio Wave, Alma, Wisconsin, Big River Theater. I would miss it at your own risk, folks. Spectrum Memo Volume 1 will be holding their in-store Jingle Jams concert each Friday and Saturday evening through December 22nd. Tonight, it's the Jim Pullman Band. Tomorrow evening, Quinn Elizabeth. You can glance at the full schedule online at volume1.org/holiday. Did I say holiday? UW Stout celebrates the holidays in grand style this weekend as the symphonic singers and vocal jazz ensemble raise their voices and lower their voices, all at the direction of Daniel Clark, listed in the university directory as being involved in speech, communication, foreign language, theater, and music.
I actually am the director of choral and vocal music.
Okay.
So I teach voice lessons as well as teach the choirs and elective music.
Okay. Are you a Wisconsin native?
I'm originally from Connecticut, although I'm tail also from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, South Carolina, and Ohio. I've been here since the beginning of the semester, so the end of August I moved in.
Oh, okay. So you're kind of a newcomer. Are you enjoying UW Stout?
I am, very much.
It's quite a university. It's quite diverse, isn't it?
Yeah, it is extremely diverse. It's really interesting to have so many different, you know, different programs that you don't normally see in a university situation.
And, you know, I've always had a healthy respect for all the programs at Stout, but I must admit that my impression level went through the roof when I found out a while ago that there are really no music majors at Stout. Many of the students are doing what they do because they love to play and they love to sing.
Absolutely. The caliber is very, very nice compared to, you know, considering we do not have a major at Stout at all in music.
As a mentor of those young people, does knowing that affect your level of regard for what your students are doing?
I think it affects my judgment as far as how I do things, what I plan for programs, and things like that. It doesn't affect my teaching or how much I push them.
Hmm.
It does affect where the goals start, but the way I teach, a goal starts in a certain place, and then when that is met, the challenges just increase.
Oh, okay.
And a new goal is set. They'll reach the goals no matter what. It may start in a different place than I would start it if I had, you know, a music major.
Okay.
But in many schools, too, there's, even with a music program, there's a lot of non-music majors in the ensembles, especially the choirs.
Has to be kind of gratifying to stand in front of a group of young people knowing that they are really, really, really enjoying what they're doing.
Yeah, it is. And being able to add to that enjoyment and add to that passion is actually what fuels me and what is really part of my legacy and my goal.
Back to you for a moment. Vocalist, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. And what has been your experience? Have you performed?
I have performed a little bit, but I'm not as much of a performer. My initial degree is in music education, and then my subsequent degrees are in choral conducting. So really, for my master's and my doctorate, my instrument, if you will, was choir.
That's Daniel Clark, director of choral studies at UW Stout. We're talking about a concert tomorrow night featuring the symphonic singers and vocal jazz ensemble. 7:30, Harvey Hall Theater. Tell me about, because this was an intriguing title to me, tell me about symphonic singing. I'm trying to imagine it myself without knowing. Is that just a large choir that has all the vocal components of a symphony orchestra?
Well, you know, there's a couple of different implications of symphonic singing. One is that, yes, it is a large ensemble like a symphony orchestra would be. The other implication is that they perform works with a symphony orchestra.
Oh, okay.
In a style. So they would perform with instruments a larger work, like at Christmas time. Obviously, right now we're hearing the Messiah a lot. So works like that, the typical designation for a group that does that type of repertoire.
Ah, the vocal jazz ensemble. Now, that title is also interesting to me. It seems like your singers are saying they can do anything instrumentalists can do.
Well, and that is the implication of a vocal jazz ensemble, because there is some compositions that require scat singing, which is improvisational, you know, singing that imitates instrumental playing. And we do have four individuals scat singing on one of our compositions in this concert.
Is there crossover between the two groups, or are they totally separate individuals?
There's quite a bit of crossover. Probably two-thirds, I think, of the group are in both ensembles.
So these young people have a lot of stuff to learn, don't they?
Yes, and actually the majority of the concert will be memorized, so they've been scrambling to get that done.
Yeah, that is energetic.
Yes.
I haven't been there. The Harvey Hall Theater, is it a great venue in which to showcase your talents?
It is. It's a beautiful venue. It's recently been renovated. So it's a typical theater situation. And to accommodate the choir, we've put in a situation where they'll actually be moving quite a bit. So they will not only be on stage, and their stage format will change, they will actually be off stage and out in the hall quite a bit, the big choir. The Jazz Vocal Ensemble will stay on stage simply because they need microphones.
Tell us, if you would, what's on the program tomorrow night. Is it holiday in nature?
It is very holiday in nature. What we've done is we've centered the entire program around "'Twas the Night Before Christmas." So the poem will be recited.
Oh.
And in between the different stanzas, there will be compositions that tie into the verses. For instance, after the "Not a Creature Was Stirring, Not Even a Mouse" is read, a composition called "Prayer of the Mouse" will be sung. And after, you know, visions of sugar plums dance in their heads, the dance of the sugar plum fairies will be sung, and so on.
Now, are the groups singing a cappella, or is there some accompaniment?
Some of it is a cappella, some of it is accompanied, so it's a mix. The symphonic singers, they will be accompanied only by piano when they are accompanied, and the vocal jazz will be doing some accompaniment, just piano. I think there's only one piece, but they also have bass guitar and drum accompaniment with them.
It sounds as if it is a wonderful opportunity to yet again get yourself back into the holiday spirit if you've found it waning a little bit with our lack of snow. The concert is tomorrow night, December 8th, 7:30, Harvey Hall Theater, UW Stout. Daniel Clark, thanks so much for being with us on Spectrum West.
Thank you very much.
Support for WPR comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, announcing a new location in Eau Claire at the corner of Claremont Avenue and Craig Road. Complete information, including membership and loan applications, is at wisconsincu.org. Support also comes from Festival Foods, offering gift cards for friends, family, or coworkers that can be used store-wide for groceries, fruit baskets, party platters, hot deli lunches, and much more. Details at festfoods.com.
Spectrum West, the name of the program. Thanks for being with us. Time is 5:21. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you with us. The all-female a cappella group Audacious performs this evening at 7:30 in Schofield Auditorium at UW Eau Claire. And the Department of Music and Theater Arts, along with the UWEC Foundation, present the 38th Holiday Concert at 2 and 5 p.m. Sunday, Zorn Arena. That's a who's who of university vocal and instrumental groups. Tickets at the Service Center and at 836-3727. Well, our buddy Jim Oliver, who always finds time to be a part of this and never asks for anything in return, Santa's going to be good to this guy, often talks about productions of regional theater companies. But this week, it's about a book, and he welcomes the author. Jim Oliver, you're on.
Rob Bignell is an author of several works of journalism and the published author of short stories, nonfiction books, and poetry. He's a master's degree in English and taught writing for 8 years in Wisconsin, California, New Mexico. He graduated from Menominee High School and the University of Wisconsin-River Falls and now resides in Hudson. He recently published his first fiction book, Windmill. Rob Bignell joins us to talk about that first novel. I read on your webpage that your first novel took quite a long time to complete, so tell us about that and whether you plan on taking so long to do a second.
Well, sure. I wrote it actually almost 11 years ago, the year of 2001, when I was living in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, and I spent about a year writing it, and I finished it, and I hated it, and actually stuffed it away in a drawer and started a second novel. I moved back to Wisconsin from Southern California here just this last summer, and when I got back, a few people had read my novel 10 years ago, my parents and my godmother who lives in Durand. And they all said to me, did you ever get that book published? I said, no, I hated it. I didn't like it. It needed some work. I went on and wrote other things. And they said, no, you should go and try to get it published. And while unpacking my stuff in Hudson, I came across the manuscript, which I still had. And so I said, well, I'm kind of tired of moving stuff. Let me just look at the first page or two. And the next thing you know, I read the entire chapter. And I said, wow, this isn't too bad, actually. It's pretty good. And so I called up the old publisher that I had who'd done some of my other books. And he said, yeah, send it out. I'd love to look at it. And he called me back within a week and I want to print this. This is great. This is fabulous. I said, let me revise it first. So I did a little revision to it. There's a few things in it that needed a little tightening up, some wording, some sentences. My 10 years of improved writing, I hope, improved, allowed me to do that. And another thing I did was I had to update it slightly. One of the problems I ran into with the plot as I reread it was, well, why didn't that one character just use his cell phone to get out of this jam? We didn't have we had cell phones in 2000, but they weren't as prevalent, obviously, as today. So I had to fix that. That was easy to do. Probably the most significant change I made to it, actually, though, was the character of Abby, the female character. I realized that the description of her fit my ex-wife. And I decided I did not want to publish a book which made my ex-wife, had my ex-wife in it, let's just say that. So I changed the physical description of her to match another person. So those are the big changes. But largely, it appears exactly as it was written in terms of plot structure, certainly.
Well, I grew up on a farm where windmills were a pretty common sight in those days.
Absolutely.
Today, other than the wind farms with their huge wind turbines, about the only place you see an old-fashioned windmill are on farms operated by the Amish. So how did you decide on the title of your novel?
I grew up in West Central Wisconsin on a farm, dairy farm, and every dairy farm around me back in the late 60s and early 70s had a windmill on it, usually not operating or functioning, though. I noticed once while driving through eastern Wisconsin, and I noticed an old windmill on a farm, and it was actually working and operating, and I began to wax nostalgic about windmills and growing up with them. And it struck me that the image of the windmill worked really well in terms of characters. As a child, I'd liked watching windmills because the way the sunlight reflects off each blade as it's spinning around. It's the same light that's hitting it, if you will, but it's all reflected in a slightly different way just because of the position of the blade relative to the other blades. And it struck me that that was a lot like people or characters, like family members. They're all experiencing the same thing, but sort of reflecting back their experiences in a slightly different way. So as I begin to think about that, that just gave me the idea that, well, let's come up with some characters who are like those blades in the windmill and see what we can do with them.
He is Rob Bignell, mm-hmm. author of the book Windmill. Expand a little bit more about what the book is about.
Sure.
This farm family.
Yeah. It's about a father. His name's Carl Steiner, and his two sons, Peter's the elder and Lyle's the younger. About 15 years before the book begins, the wife slash mother dies in a tragic car accident. During the past 15 years, as the children have reached adulthood, they, along with their father, have sort of created this real tenuous balance between each other on sort of dealing with this death, or maybe not dealing with the death, actually, and in running the farm, ensuring that it stays afloat. What happens then is one day the new young reporter at the local weekly newspaper comes out to interview them and do a feature story about their windmill because it's the only one left remaining in the county that actually operates and functions. And so it turns out, though, that this young reporter is the spitting image of the mother slash wife. And so Carl and his two sons, they're like these blades in the windmill, which are in perfect balance. And Abby, the young reporter, is sort of like the monkey wrench that gets thrown into that windmill and causes the blades to all fly off into different directions. And so their motivations, their interests, their needs all begin to conflict with one another.
Why did you decide to set it in Nebraska?
Well, I wanted to set it in the Midwest somewhere. That's primarily where windmills are prevalent in the Great Plains or in the upper Midwest. I decided I wanted to stay away from Wisconsin because I didn't want people thinking that this was a book about where I grew up in Wisconsin. A lot of the imagery actually is, though, and it could be transplanted to Iowa, Dakota, northern Illinois, Minnesota, Michigan. So Nebraska worked.
Well, you've also published a nonfiction series mm-hmm. called Hikes right. with Tykes and a collection of poetry, Love Letters to Sophie's Mom. So mm-hmm. tell us about those.
Yeah, Hikes with Tykes. I used to do a lot of backcountry hiking. And after my son was born about 6 years ago, after about 4 or 5 months, when he was old enough to hold his head up, I decided I could put him in a backpack with me that you can get these child carriers you put on your back. So I got one and I took him on a hike. I threw a diaper in my backpack and threw in some milk that I could mix up with water in my canteen and thought I was the smartest guy in the world. And I got out on the trail and realized I knew nothing about hiking with children. My son, as babies are wont to do, needed a diaper change. And so I said, well, I got a diaper here, but I realized I had no pad to lay him down on. I had to put him on the cold ground. So I had to take my jacket off, put him on my jacket. Now my jacket that I'm wearing is wet and that. Then he got thirsty, so I mixed up some milk, and then he wanted more than what I actually had brought with me, and I couldn't really mix it with what I had already made, otherwise it'd be sour. So I realized I didn't know anything about hiking with children. So it was sort of a trial and error experience, and what I did is put together sort of a practical guide on these are things you should do if you're going to go hiking with kids. And then the second book in the series are games and activities. As my son got older, I realized I had to entertain him, but I wanted to entertain him with nature-type games. And so that's the second book in the series, are Games and Activities. The Love Letters to Sophie's Mom, that is a book of poetry to a lost love that I was in a relationship with as recently as this past year. I never intended to publish the poems. They were going to be a collection of love poems that I did publish, but like self-published and gave to her as like a birthday present. But we broke up. I didn't quite have all the poems finished in the collection and certainly not enough to publish as a book. So I added some breakup poems as sort of a catharsis. So it's a whole arc story of a relationship from its beginning to sort of its love heights to its breakup.
Where can we get your book? Are you planning any kinds of book signing, any kind of events?
Yeah, absolutely. The next book reading I have that's nearby Eau Claire would actually be in Menominee. That's on next Thursday, December 13th at 4:30 to 6:30. That's at Bookends on Main, which is in downtown. Menominee's having its winter days that day. I also have a reading the following Saturday in Minneapolis in Dinkytown. We have more readings coming up in January. There'll be one in Hudson at the Chapter 2 bookstore, and there'll probably be a reading in River Falls come next spring at the university. We're in process of setting that up. The books, you can get them here in Eau Claire at Volume 1. If you are in River Falls, you'll want to go to Hudson to Chapter 2 to pick them up. If you're in Menominee, we have them at Bookends on Main. If you're a little farther aflung and you're going into the Twin Cities, I'm trying to think of the darn name of the store now. I'm drawing a blank. It's a it's the Bookhouse in Dinkytown, which is near the U of M campus, has it. Otherwise, you can just go to Amazon.com and buy it. BarnesandNoble.com, they all have copies of it.
Well, we've been visiting with Rob Bignell, author of Windmill, the story of a farm family in Nebraska. The book is available in area bookstores and online booksellers. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate the time.
Spectrum West on a Friday, December 7th, 2012. The time is 5:32.
Old Bafana, all you want to do is sweep, sweep, sweep. Every morning, noon, and night until you
tomorrow
sweep,
evening in Amory at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts. It's a musical story with which you might not be familiar for the holidays. Old Bafana. Sweep. But for which you'll have a greater appreciation after dropping in to see the Kenland Players Theater do their thing. In case the name Ken Lundquist sounds familiar, it might be because he was a favorite of your kids at young people stages at festivals and summer events all over Wisconsin, including close to us, Eau Claire, Festival in the Pines, Sawdust City Days, etc. I know he captivated my daughter Cassie when she was just 5 or 6 or 7, and today she's 26 with a daughter of her own, so that will tell you something about the Lundquist staying power. He writes, he plays, he sings. In fact, the shortcut might be to ask him what he doesn't do. Today, we're talking about Ken Lundquist and the Kenland Players Theater and the fact they're coming north all the way to Amory tomorrow night to present a play entitled Old Bafana. Ken Lundquist, it's nice to talk with you again.
Very good to be with you, Al.
Quickly, how's the singer-songwriter thing doing, and what's new in that room of your big house before we get on to the theatrical side?
Well, I like to be honest with people. I've had a long and very successful, in my small world, career as a singer-songwriter performer, stretching back now probably about 35 years, visiting schools and festivals, as you mentioned, all around the Midwest, primarily in Wisconsin, sometimes further afield into New York and Ontario and out to Colorado. I have to confess, the last couple of years have been the roughest of my long career. The funding in schools has been cut dramatically, and of course, those of us who do what I do, which is sort of a symbiotic relationship with the schools, arts and education, we have been among the first things to shrivel and wither on the vine. So I tell people, well, the bread and butter, the meat and potatoes that I used to have is now gone, and now I'm living on the gravy and the side dishes. But we're still making it, and you know, that's life in the arts. You just keep you keep going on, and it's a passion. And all your listeners out there who want to support the arts, by golly, bless you all.
Well, the one thing that we talk about on Spectrum West a lot is artistic people, artists, artisans, creative folks. It really doesn't matter what kind of obstacles they're up against. They do find a way.
It's like, what is it? Mercury, or what is it that always...
Well, water always finds
water always finds a way into your basement. That's what I'm trying to do.
The sign of a very talented guy is when, you know, each time one schedules an interview, it's to talk about yet another way that that person entertains people. So before we meet Bafana, tell us about the Kenland Players Theater.
I have had the pleasure of touring not only the Old Bafana show, but a number of other small musical stories or musical theater pieces over the past 25 years with a handful of talented actor, singer, musicians. You know, I write full-scale musicals for children's theaters to perform with casts in a sit-down location. But I began writing these musical stories a couple of decades ago that only require 5 or 6 people. And so we can tour these musicals or musical stories widely with this small cast. And I've just been blessed to be able to draw really great folks into this small troupe. So Kenland Players Theater is the name of, you know, my theater troupe. that morphs in terms of personnel from time to time.
Yeah. Where is Ken Land?
Well, as everyone in the know is aware, it's at the crossroads of laughter and music and imagination, right here in the middle of my head.
Yeah, I was
going to
say
yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say that. I want to just step back a bit, because you talked about the fact that you're not performing as much as you did as as a singer-songwriter.
Sure.
But how about the writing aspect of it? You doing that?
Well, I'm constantly writing. I used to do, actually up until 2011, that year I was doing 8 or 9 artists-in-residence songwriting experiences in schools around Wisconsin. Since then, alas, I've had none, but that doesn't keep me from writing.
Yeah.
I'm writing constantly in all the different areas that interest me, whether it's topical humor and political songs, which I've always done, even though many people know me only as a children's performer, stretching way back to when I started recording and performing. I was inspired by Tom Lehrer and Tom Paxton and Pete Seeger and Bob Dylan. I've always written about current events and what's going on in the world. I write a lot about the environment and nature in Wisconsin, celebrating nature and cautioning about things that seem to deserve a heads up. I still am always writing children's songs and musical theater. As a matter of fact, I have a brand new musical theater show debuting this spring. It's called Fairy Tulips, and it pertains in a general thematic way to the Easter season.
Ah. See, that's what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear that Ken Lundquist is not just sitting around twiddling his thumbs.
Oh, no. You know, I think it's probably true of all artists. The harder times get, the harder you work. Like everyone in your listening audience, I get these calls from these folks wanting to talk to the manager of the business, right?
Uh-huh, right.
And I say, well, I'm the president and the janitor. Will that do? I mean, I wear all the hats in my world.
We're talking with Ken Lundquist, Kenland Players Theater. They're bringing the charming seasonal musical, I guess we should call it, tomorrow evening, 7:30, Northern Lakes Center for the Arts. In Amory. Now, Ken, let's go on to Old Bafana. I'm guessing most people in the audience are like me and they haven't heard the story. Tell us about this character.
It's interesting. If you come from an Italian-American family, you may know Bafana very, very well. I was talking with somebody about this in Oshkosh last Sunday when we did our first performance of the year. She's from an Italian-American family that did celebrate Bafana here in the States. Bafana is a very popular holiday character in Italy and beyond. In many countries in Eastern Europe, there are similar characters that go by different names. In Poland, it's Babula. In Romania, it's Baba Yaga. In Russia, Babushka.
Hmm.
Women who are typically carrying a broom, they have a scarf over their head, a basket of baked goods. They're grumpy old women who live alone. This spirit, this Bafana, Babushka, Babula, Baba Yaga, is an ancient tradition predating Christianity. It was a spirit of goodwill who was told that a special child would be born that would make the world a better place. Since she didn't know what child it was, she searches every year through some magical power that was given to her by angels all around the world to find this special child. She's flying with her broom.
Mm-hmm.
She leaves a baked gift and sings a lullaby for the child and sweeps their room clean at every child's home. She doesn't know. It might be this child or that child. It could be you, Al.
True.
You could be the one.
Wow.
And she sings that. Her story, with the advent of Christianity in Eastern Europe, became absorbed into the holiday traditions in cultures in that area of the world. They didn't want to give up this good spirit who had a beautiful message to offer, that anyone could be the one to make a better world. So they wove in some of the traditional iconic imagery of the Christmas holiday, three kings come to visit this grumpy old woman and tell her that a special child is coming. And there's a star that keeps her awake all night. And she follows this caravan of kings, but never catches up. And so the gist of the original tale is intact with the addition of these Christian symbols. It's a lovely tale that seems to satisfy folks from a very wide spectrum of belief. And we love that because it does, to us, it doesn't matter where you lie in that spectrum of belief. We want children and adults to hear this positive message. And, you know, sometimes people are closed to hearing things if they attach this denomination to it or that denomination. Oh, I don't want to listen to that. Not unlike our politicians, really. So we like to have the door wide open and have people be able to approach this story and feel good about the positive message they're receiving, and it seems to work.
What about the music?
The music is in many different styles. There's a reggae-styled song. There are some gospel, rock and roll kind of songs, ballads, folk-based tunes, pop-oriented songs. There are 10 tunes in all.
Okay.
And it's one of the great delights of my life to be associated with this positive story and message. It seems to always receive a very warm response from folks, a wonderful thing for all of us to be part of.
And to see, I'm sure. So to the people who are going to be driving down and up and over to Amory tomorrow night, it sounds as if they're going to, obviously, they're going to hear some neat music. They're going to see probably some colorful costumes. Are they going to be able to take some of the music home with them?
Well, that's an excellent question. We'll get to that last.
Okay.
Yet there are colorful costumes. There's a lovely sort of almost like Starry, Starry Night, the Van Gogh painting backdrop. Of course, the Northern Lakes Performing Arts Center is a very intimate venue.
Yes, it is.
And it's so cozy. Combining that sort of intimacy with the sort of folksy intimacy of this story is a great combination. Yes, there's choreography. We have a wonderful time doing it. They can take music home if they're interested, of course. We have a really nice CD of the show.
Well, you know, it sounds like it's going to be a very wonderful evening. For the sake of everyone who shows up, I hope during the performance it just starts to snow outside. I hope that there's this wonderful, aesthetically beautiful winter seasonal scene going on outside that little former church in Amory. And I hope the snow melts just in time for you guys to drive back to Madison.
Now, that's a nice secondary wish.
There you go. Ken Lundquist, Old Bafana, tomorrow evening, Northern Lakes Center for the Arts, starts at 7:30. Very affordable evening. $5 for adults, and you can take the kids for a buck. How do they do that?
Support for WPR comes from Ken Vance Hyundai, featuring the new 2013 Hyundai Sonata with panoramic sunroof that extends the entire length of the roof, allowing a wide-angle view of the sky, day or night. More at kenvance.com.
Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony. The Celebrate concert features holiday favorites like Sleigh Ride, White Christmas, and selections from Handel's Messiah, December 15th at Chippewa Falls High School. Details are available at cvsymphony.org.
Yeah, you know, it does seem like the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra is busy, and yes, it does feel like Jeff Peterson was just here. It's because he was. The end of October, when they welcomed Davina and the Vagabonds to appear with him on stage. And now, on Spectrum West, it's a holiday concert, but not just any holiday concert. Jeff Peterson is back. Why doesn't it surprise me that your concert has the words big and bold in the title?
That's a good question. It shouldn't surprise you, because we are big and bold. We always are willing to take chances.
First of all, tell me, just for the sake of stretching out this interview, tell me why it's big.
It's big because we've got, first of all, we've got a lot of music. It's quite a large show. We're covering a lot of ground, and we're bringing in a couple of vocalists. We're doing everything we can to sort of stretch, especially, you know, when it comes to holiday music, people get pretty set in their ways. They're all used to hearing Santa Baby over the you know, over the speakers at the mall. And we want to show them that there's some really fun stuff that can be done, and in some cases, really expansive. We've got a really cool arrangement of God Rest You, Merry Gentlemen, that was originally written for the Airmen of Note, that has some just amazingly interesting stuff in it and really sort of stretches some boundaries that I think are really cool. We cover lots of the great traditional songs, but in ways that people have never heard them before. You know, we've got a bass trombone version of Jingle Bells that's absolutely wonderful. You know, a lot of stuff like that to sort of, you know, we've got an Ella Fitzgerald chart we're doing with Kathy Wrights. We've got several other really interesting charts. Jamie Simmons, a UWEC grad, did a tune called Coventry Carol, or an arrangement of Coventry Carol for big band that we like to refer to as the dark side of Christmas, because he took it and made it very sort of minor and dark, and it's really fun. So I think that we'll expand people's view of what holiday music can actually sound like.
Well, those are wonderful explanations, and I hope you haven't exhausted yourself, because now I want to know why it's bold.
Well, it's bold because the CBJO is bold. We're loud. We're energetic. We're gonna, you know, we are exciting. Part of what we want to do is again show that big band music can be really forward moving and you know, do things that isn't necessarily danceable, but is an enormous amount of fun to listen to. And so we've got stuff that is definitely challenging for the band. We've got a couple of charts that are pretty difficult, but are also things that, you know, most big bands would never even touch. And that's part of what makes, I think, what we're doing bold.
It's almost in your heritage, though, of an aggregation like yours, because it seems to me that over the years, the big bands were the ones who, even years ago, did different arrangements, including holiday songs.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the greats, you know, Stan Kenton had an entire book of just holiday music that he had specially arranged for his band, and they did just some absolutely amazing things. Unfortunately, many of those transcriptions are now lost, and so, you know, we don't have it anymore. But, he would do arrangements of really traditional Christmas music, and then, you know, do it for a full big band and bring in a French horn section and all sorts of stuff, and, you know, do it in odd meters. And yeah, no, it was great music. So, you know, I'd like to think that it's part of the tradition, yes, to stretch things a little bit.
So are the arrangements of familiar holiday songs that you guys are playing, are those old charts that weren't lost, or are they new things that you guys have done, or a combination, or what?
It's some of both. Some of them are classic big band holiday tunes. Some of them are quite new. We've got a couple of charts from Gordon Goodwin, one of the great East Coast, West Coast arrangers from, you know, the last decade or so. But we've also got, you know, transcriptions. Dave Wolpe did a great arrangement of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, but, you know, we're also throwing in, you know, music from the Charlie Brown Christmas special. Yeah. And I would say it's more new than old, that's for sure.
Jeff Peterson, our guest. Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra has their big, bold holiday concert next Thursday, the 13th, 7:30 p.m. at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Expound more, if you would, on the exciting premiere that's going to be part of Thursday's show.
Oh, certainly. Well, we've been working with composer and arranger Andrew Neasley, who is actually also an Eau Claire alum, who is now the assistant director of the Manhattan School of Music's jazz program. And I had talked to him about this concert months and months ago and said, hey, would you be interested in doing something unusual, you know, something new for us? And we talked about it for a while, and he said, you know, I've never seen anyone do a big band version of anything from The Messiah. And I said, well, no, you know, we looked and looked and looked, and no one had ever touched it. I mean, probably for good reason. The Messiah is rather epic. And as it turns out, we didn't realize at the time, of course, you know, the symphony is doing The Messiah only two nights later, only they're doing the legit Messiah.
Yeah.
But so Andrew and I started talking about it more, and I thought this would be perfect. You know, it would be an opportunity to take a holiday tune that everybody knows and everybody's familiar with, you know, the Hallelujah Chorus, and really turn it into something that is our own, that is also, that swings, that has great solos in it, has some interesting meter changes in it, and Andrew did just an absolutely amazing job. It's a wonderful chart, and we're very excited to premiere it, and it's never been performed before, so this will be the first time it's ever been played.
Are there some big, bold vocal hallelujahs or not?
No, there are no vocals on this one. It's all being, although we do have both Kathy Wrights and Adrian Klenz will be singing with us on some other charts. In fact, they're going to do a duet together. There's that rather cheesy version, Tom Jones song, It's Cold Outside. They've taken it and I think improved it rather dramatically, and hopefully no one will throw underwear at Adrian. But, you know.
That's an interesting old song. I just heard that a while ago. It's interesting that they talk about having another drink and another cigarette. And
right, right. Right, yeah.
That's cool. I like
it, it definitely lets you know the era in which it was recorded. Yeah. That's certainly not a 21st century version of that song without any question. Yeah. But Kathy and Adrian are going to do a great job with it, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, they're both such great singers, and we're so lucky to be able to get them to come work with us on a regular basis.
Take us inside a planning session when the Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra looks to plan a season or a concert, because you guys always seem to come up with something that's it's a little bit of a right angle to, you know, the norm.
First of all, obviously, we start very early. I mean, you know, we've already put in for our dates for next year with the State Theater. We'll know pretty soon when they are. In most cases, what happens is the principal players in the band, lead trumpet player, musical director, lead alto player, and myself, you know, sit down and say, okay, next season, what do we want to do? What are our big goals? What are the things that we want to accomplish? We'll actually be having our planning meeting for the next season probably this January. And, you know, we'll say, okay, well, who do we want to bring us in as a guest artist? And we're actually bringing Mike Nelson, the trombone player from Prince's Hornheads, is going to be playing with us in February. So, you know, we'll sit down and start thinking about that in January. And, you know, we don't always have theme concerts. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. We've started this tradition now of having what we call our Giants of Jazz concert, where we do an entire show of someone's music. So last year it was Duke Ellington. This year it's going to be an entire show of Count Basie music in April. And, you know, so we'll say, okay, who do we want to do next? And then we start thinking about questions like, okay, what's music that people might know who the composers are but haven't heard that music? You know, how can we bring in other local artists? You know, we had that opportunity to do that great show with the Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony, which was an enormous amount of fun. We did the show with the Chippewa Valley Symphony. Right. You know, we're looking at, you know, other things that we could do. One of the things we're sort of toying with right now is, you know, Eric Clapton did that wonderful album with the Jazz at Lincoln Center people and Wynton Marsalis. And we're thinking, okay, we've been tossing around the idea of, is there any way to get a hold of that music and do some of that in a concert, do sort of a blues-inspired big band show, you know, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's a big brainstorming session, and then of course eventually we have to get down to the nuts and bolts of figuring it all out. But you know, we're talking about possibly bringing in essentially a composer in residence next year for a week, and have someone actually come and write a whole bunch of music for us, and also write music for all the local high school bands, so that they can come and perform with us at the same time. You know, sure. I think we always want to be expanding boundaries as much as we can. We haven't reached the point yet. That's impossible. We would rather try and push it, and if it doesn't quite work, so be it.
So nothing's off limits?
I don't think so.
Not in a brainstorm session.
Not in a brainstorm session, but I mean, honestly, we have, you know, the only thing that's off limits at this point is, you know, you can make the joke about, oh, wouldn't it be fun to bring in Chris Bode? It's like, well, okay, if, you know, someone comes up with 50 grand, we can do that. But, you know, outside of those limits, no, I don't think we see ourselves as having too many restrictions on what do.
In West Wisconsin, there are really no talent restrictions.
No. I mean, it's an amazing talent pool. And you know, we could draw in new people all the time. We've talked about doing, you know, Don Ellis, one of the great 70s big band guys, did all sorts of really interesting ethnic music, where he took, you know, Indian and Turkish music and turned it into big band music. Well, that opens all sorts of doors to bring in guests that you'd never, you know, who thinks of bringing in a sitar player with a big band? But we can do that, you know. So yeah, no, absolutely, we are constantly looking for new and challenging ways to approach the music.
CVJL concert next Thursday the 13th, 7:30 p.m. at the State Theater. This is one of the songs they're going to be playing. It's called Yo Tannenbaum. Tickets at eauclairearts.com, and the website is chippewajazz.org. Spectrum West at 5:55. Time for this week's edition of What's on Stage. Jim Oliver is back.
Here's what's on stage this weekend and beyond at Western Wisconsin theater venues. How I Learned to Drive will be presented tonight, Saturday and Sunday, by the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire Theater Department in the Riverside Theater of the Haas Fine Arts Center at the University. The Children's Theater at the Phipps Center for the Arts will present Madeline's Christmas next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The Old Gem Theater Professional Company and Young Performers Ensemble will present the best Christmas pageant ever at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. The show will be performed at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, 2 p.m. Sunday, and next Saturday and Sunday. It will be performed for groups weekdays through December 21st. Guys on Ice plays tonight and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The show runs weekends through January 5th. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production of White Christmas plays tonight, Saturday and Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. 12 Angry Men, produced by the Menominee Theater Guild, plays tonight, Saturday and Sunday at the Mabel Tainter Theater in Menominee. A dinner theater production of The Trial of Ebenezer Scrooge plays tonight, Saturday and Sunday, and the following Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Theater in the Woods in Shell Lake. But according to the theater's website, all performances except for Thursday, December 13th are sold out. The Northern Star Theater's Kids on Stage production of Dickens' Christmas Carol will play tonight, Saturday, and Sunday at the Theater in Rice Lake. There are two productions of It's a Wonderful Life playing in the region. The St. Croix Festival Theater production plays tonight and Sunday in St. Croix Falls. The production runs through December 23rd. And the Space Center for Creativity in Richmond will perform the show tonight and Saturday. Junie B. in Jingle Bells and Batman Smells will be presented by the Eau Claire Children's Theater tonight at 7:30 p.m. and Saturday at 10 a.m., 11 a.m., and 1:30 p.m. and next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. Mr. Christmas, an original play by Don Hodgins, plays tonight, Saturday, and Sunday, and selected weekdays at Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. The show runs through January 13th. The Chippewa Valley Theater Guild is holding auditions for the musical They're Playing Our Song at 7 p.m. Monday and Tuesday at the Grand Little Theater in Eau Claire. They are looking for one man and one woman, and a chorus of three men and three women. And the Northern Star Theater is holding auditions from 10 a.m. to noon on Saturday for a dinner theater production of Bingo, the winning musical. The cast will include six women and one man. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Wow, lots going on. That wraps up Spectrum West, folks. I'm Al Ross. Remember, no Spectrum West on the 21st, but you will hear the Big River Radio Wave Holiday Show playback. That begins at 5 o'clock. Thanks today to Hannah Lagerman for promotional support. Special thanks to Pete McLean for production support. Without Mac, believe me, it might have been a much bumpier ride today, folks. Next week, comedian Jeff Cesario will be with us. And, of course, a lot more. I'm Al Ross. Have a good weekend. Maybe we'll see you in Alma tomorrow night. Hope so.
For the sixth consecutive year, Middleton Outreach Ministry is celebrating the holidays with Heartline Theatrical's performance of the radio-style play It's a Wonderful Life on Saturday and Sunday, December 8th and 9th at the Middleton Performing Arts Center. The evening and matinee performances will feature live music and an hors d'oeuvre and dessert reception. For more information and a chance to win tickets, click on wpr.org/Madison.